Three, two, one. Hey. Well, we made it pretty far that time. All right. Okay. Ready?
Three, two, one.
Should I give it? Or, three, two,
one.
All right. Hey, everybody. John Foss, CW Twin Cities. And this is kind of insane because somehow we got Tim Meadows in the house.
Hey.
What are you doing here? How do we pull this off? I can't believe it.
I'm impressed by your management that they would actually get me down here, because I usually don't do things like this.
You know? Well, Sophia, she runs the place, basically. She somehow pulled it off and fixed the boiler before this interview. So
it was pretty amazing.
Are you impressed?
I'm super impressed. In fact, I don't even think she should be in Minnesota. I think she should be like in New York or LA, where you can really appreciate somebody who works as hard as, you know, as Sophia.
So,
because look, you got me here. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know, that's amazing. But I will say, you're here in Minnesota playing the joke joint this weekend, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. But you basically just insulted the entire state of Minnesota by saying that anybody that is good at stuff, like Sophia, should not be in Minnesota. Like, are we second-class citizens here or what?
Well, if Minnesota's insulted by that, then Minnesota's too sensitive.
Okay.
And should grow up.
It's Minnesota nice here. We can't really take any criticism, so.
Well, sorry. But you know what? I think you can, I think anybody in America, like if you're working somewhere locally, you know, wherever, and especially in this business, and you want to like get better at it, you have to go to New York or LA eventually.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm trying to open up Sophia's opportunity. That's all.
Yeah,
I think she deserves better than you.
We're holding her back.
See, you obviously don't have a lot of faith in her, whereas I just met her like 20 minutes ago, and I think she should be a nationally known producer.
I agree, but so should I stay
here? Or boiler operator.
Exactly. Should I stay here then?
I haven't seen much of your talent, so.
You've seen the best so far.
Of what?
Of
you?
My talent, yeah.
Okay.
It's downhill from here.
Well, you should stick around here for a little while and get better at it, and then head out to, I don't know, maybe go to Chicago next.
Okay.
Like, I think you should workshop this, like other small cities in the Midwest. Whereas I think Sophia can go from here to NBC in New York.
Just skip the minor leagues altogether.
She's done it already.
All right.
She stopped the boiler from making noise before this thing. You didn't do anything.
No, I just sat here.
You sat here and we both did, actually, and just watched it happen.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Yeah.
So I, in doing research for this interview, found probably the best hidden gem on the internet, on Amazon Prime, which is the Rose Parade hosted by Korg and Trish.
Cord and Tish.
Cord and Tish.
Yeah.
All right. Well, how did this happen? And tell the people a little bit at home about what it is.
Well, it was sort of a parody of parade coverage. You know, like, you know, you see the Thanksgiving parade or whatever. And Will and Molly, they and the writers from Funny or Die approached it as, we're going to have these two fake correspondents cover the parade. And also, we're going to have Tim Meadows as himself. And so our the conceit was that we've done this for years, and we're a team.
25 years.
Yeah. And in the last 6 years, I've sort of asked them to stop bringing up Saturday Night Live during the broadcast. And so, but they do it regardless. So that's what it was about. And it was live. It was on Amazon. It was the first time that they, first time ever that they, there was like a parody parade show, you know, that was live. And the responses from people were beautiful, because a lot of people thought it was real and were annoyed by it. And then the people that knew it was a fake enjoyed it, you know. So it was a blast, you know.
And well, one of the best things I think is when a lady during the parade is yelling at you to get a, to get out of the way because you're blocking the view.
And she was walking by, you know, as if, like, so she was coming from somewhere else. But that was just, that just happened. And I was very polite to her. And, you know, whereas I could have, at first I was thinking I should just rip on her. But, you know, she was like an old lady though. So I would have turned the audience against me. But, yeah, it was fun, man. I hope we there's some talk that we might do something else soon.
Anything you can tease?
I can't really divulge. I don't think I should yet, because it's all sort of being worked on. But we're definitely, I'm speaking as if I'm, you know, going to be in it every year. But I think we're definitely going to do another Rose Bowl parade. So I can say that.
Cool. Hopefully we'll get 25 years of that.
Mm.
So speaking of people annoying you by asking SNL questions, you were brought into SNL without having to audition, and not only that, you thought you were hired as a writer, mm-hmm. and then you got there and found out you were going to be on camera. What was it like to hear that news and then to see yourself on the opening credits for the first time?
To hear the news, you know, it was a little bit convoluted because, I don't know, back then there was a little, I don't know, I kind of feel like they were a little bit more unspecific about jobs and like, because they had a big cast already. So when I went out for my meeting, it was just sort of, I was under the impression that it was a writing job, mm-hmm. Because they already had Chris Rock on the show. And so when I went for the interview, that's what I kind of thought it was all about. And then when I came back to New York after to work, it was sort of explained to me that you're going to be a featured player, and also we want you to write for the show too. And it was I was stunned and delighted, you know. Mm-hmm. But it was also like, you know, I don't know. I don't even know how to best describe it. It was like I just kind of felt like, well, I can't say no. And I'm very appreciative, but like my whole overall feeling when I worked at SNL that first year, and that's truly, really, this is the truth, is that I thought somewhere during the week somebody's going to come out, like an executive from NBC, and go, you, what are you doing here? Get, mm-hmm. you know, pointing me and telling me to get out.
Imposter syndrome.
Yeah, it's like, because, you know, like 4 or 5 years before, I was an office manager in Detroit and going to this college. Mm-hmm. And so in that period of time, that it just, I was like, I still felt that's who I was. I didn't feel like, oh, I'm mm-hmm. I'm an actor, writer, comedian now, you know? So yeah, I had to, it was a weird feeling, yeah.
And before that, you were in Second City, and maybe people at home don't know this, but with Chris Farley.
Mm-hmm.
And you talked in the past about Lorne Michaels going there to see Chris Farley, and you just thought it was there to see him, not to see you.
Mm-hmm.
I guess my question for you is, you guys have a very different humor. He's very over the top, mm-hmm. very physical humor, mm-hmm. whereas you have subtle humor, which I love and a lot of people do. But was it tempting to, with him getting all that attention, to try to be something that you weren't? Or how did you stick to what you were, what the kind of comedian that you were?
Well, I guess by that time I was like smart enough and seasoned enough in improv and everything that I sort of knew my role in the sketches and the improv that we did. And with Farley, you really had to serve the scene. You had to sort of be the guy who asked questions to the person you're working with, you know, mm-hmm. and to not overreact to the things that he gives you back. So I was a straight man, and I knew in some of those scenes you just have to play that role, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd never been tempted to go outside of doing. I'd never been tempted to do things that I'm uncomfortable with, you know. Like I sort of know what I like to do, mm-hmm. and me trying to out energy and out big and Farley is crazy because
right.
he's just really funny.
Mm-hmm.
But I think people at SNL and when they came to see me work, they realized that the job that I had to do is also hard to do because you have to keep it moving. You have to like introduce ideas into the scene for him to go off on, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's probably why they probably thought of me as a writer first, you know?
Who was the most talented cast member that you worked with while you were on the show?
On SNL?
Mm-hmm.
Man, I don't know, man. I don't know, like it was like so many really talented people, like, but like people, you know, some people had like strengths doing certain things, but I would say like Phil Hartman was probably the person that can encompass all of those things that you want in a sketch player. I mean, he could do accents, he could do characters, he could play the straight man, he could be the funny guy. He had a weird sort of sensibility about him when he was just being himself.
Mm-hmm.
And he was really, and he was almost also like a throwback to like earlier comedians, like, you know, like Abbott Costello and you know, Lauren Hardy and people like that. Like he had some like history behind him. So he was like just really versatile. I wrote a sketch for Phil when I was there, like my second year. It was called Soap Opera Digest, and it was with Alec Baldwin. And Phil, in the scene, Phil is playing a soap opera actor. And the lines that I wrote for him were not funny. And there was like points where, like, you know, they do close-ups of the two actors and there's a musical sting under it. Mm-hmm. And it's just a camera shot of Phil just sort of looking at Alec Baldwin and like doing that soap opera thing.
Yeah.
And there was no reason that people should have been, when I wrote it, it wasn't written to be a laugh. It was written to sort of be like, this is how soap operas look. Mm-hmm. But Phil got a huge laugh just on his staring at Alec Baldwin. And it was like a sort of a revelation to me of like, you don't have to be, you know, you don't have to be big, or you know, like the comedy, it'll come if you are just, if you just commit to it. Mm-hmm. And that's what Phil was doing during those camera shots.
Okay.
He was like committing to the idea that he was a soap opera actor on a soap opera.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
Okay.
I think Mike Myers also was one of those people too. It's just he could just do it all. He could do accents, and he played straight men. He had characters. And he had a sort of fun vibe to him. So when you were watching him as an audience member, you could sense that he was having fun with it.
Mm-hmm. Was there a cast member that you thought was the best of all time that maybe made you want to get into it?
Well, for me, from SNL, it was mm-hmm. probably Bill Murray, Chevy Chase. I mean, I was in high school during those years. And so I would say like those two and had the biggest comedic influence on me as far as SNL is goes. And even Ladies Man is hugely indebted to Bill Murray and Caddyshack. Because mm-hmm. I've always approached that character as with the same sort of attitude that the character in Caddyshack has. Which is like, you know, everything is cool and I'm fine, you know. Mm-hmm. And Lady the Man was like that too. He's just like, yeah, listen, it's all good. You know, he can handle anything. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But that attitude, and I would often think of Bill Murray when I like go into that character, when, you know, whatever.
So with somebody like you that went through your career and did something, did improv, did SNL, had a very successful on-camera career, which is still going.
Mm-hmm.
What inside of you gave you made you brave enough or want to step outside the box enough to take up stand-up comedy at that point in your career? Because a lot of people start with a stand-up and then get into the other things, but you've done all these things, had all the success, and then it's like, I want to challenge myself and do something brand new.
Yeah. Well, it mainly came from from having ideas comedically and not having any way to do it. And I started doing improv again sort of after I got divorced. And I was really not a happy person. I was kind of depressed and stuff. And then a friend of mine just started saying, go and do improv. Go hang out with people that you know from Chicago. And, mm-hmm. and so I started going to UCB and the Upright Citizens Brigade, which is in LA, and the Improv Olympic in LA. And I started hanging out with people and then started doing improv again and started looking forward to it. But the thing was, I realized that like I couldn't put ideas that I had during the week into improv because that's not what improv is, you know? And so I thought, well, I should start either doing like one man show things or like just doing things where I can just get ideas out there. Mm-hmm. And that was basically the inspiration behind it. And I sort of put together a show that was a combination of those things. In the beginning, I would come out, I had two friends, Joe Canale and Brad Morris, and we would improvise together as three people. But before the show started, I would come out and talk to the audience, and I would have prepared jokes or things mm-hmm. I thought about during the week. And this was in Chicago at the Improv Olympic, so people paid $2 to come in and watch it. It wasn't like a high pressure thing of mm-hmm. like, this show better be great, you know? And then over a period of like a couple years, I went from having no material to having like 20 minutes. And then I kept doing open mics and I kept writing and trying to come up with other stuff. And then before I knew it, I had 45 minutes and I didn't need those other two guys. Mm-hmm. So I fired them and I started going out on my own.
Where does it rank as far as like things you like to do, like improv, comedy, acting?
I don't know if there's a rank. I think at any time each of them is as rewarding as the other. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. sometimes when I'm doing improv, when I'm working with really funny people, and we're all into it, and there's like this magical sort of thing when it's good, because it's all of us just making this up and making it happen together. And the audience is in on it, and it's really magical and great. And there's times when I'm doing stand-up where the material is working, the audience is great. I go off and talk about other things, and the audience is with me, and I feel like, you know, this is the best thing ever.
Mm-hmm.
But I never get that feeling when I'm doing film or TV things. It's always, I mean, I enjoy it, and yeah. It's like you have moments of like, oh, I said everything right, and I think they got the funny that they mm-hmm. wanted to get. But there's never that moment of like, you know,
the live
satisfaction or reaction mm-hmm. from people. Because even when you're filming stuff, like the crew won't laugh until they say cut, you know? And then you know, like, oh, they like that, and they mm-hmm. held out for it. But the live reaction from the audiences when you're doing improv or stand-up is just, you feel good, you know?
Have you ever had, as you've been working through stand-up the last 8 years, have you ever had it go severely wrong?
Severely wrong?
Or where you're just like, man, these guys aren't getting this tonight.
I had a few, yeah.
What do you do there? Just power through it?
Yeah, you power through it. I talked about it to the audience, and I did a show in Baltimore once, and Baltimore was rough. I'll never go back.
Really?
It was rough. It wasn't just rough, but it was like the people were mean and angry. And so...
Like heckling the whole time?
Not just heckling, but just like commenting after I'd say something. So I would say something, and it may get a laugh or whatever, and then somebody in the audience would go, yeah, right, or something like, you know. Mm-hmm. And then there was a point in this, like, one show I did in Baltimore, and I just said to the audience, like, you guys suck. This is, like, horrible. I mean, it's mm-hmm. not just me. And then I had to do, like, 15 more minutes or something. And so I said to them, like, I go, you don't deserve me. You really don't. So I turned my back to the audience and sat on the stool and did the rest of my act into the microphone. And I just kept saying the jokes, and they started getting into it because I was sort of, you know, being mean to them. And, mm-hmm. you know, I wasn't like, you know, you guys suck and I like this. I was like, I think I'm better than this. I don't think you're giving me a fair shot. I mm-hmm. think, you know. And so I did like 15 minutes on a stool with my back to the audience. I said goodnight. I never looked at them again. I just walked off stage.
Wow.
But the thing was, it's like, oh, yeah, they got into it after I got out of the, you know, the plane was going down, and I pulled it up.
That's cool.
And like landed safely. And yeah, but they were just mean, man. It was funny.
What about the Twin Cities audience? Is there anything that sticks out with them as far as their feedback?
No, I mean, I think the last time I was here, it was fun. I don't have any like painful memories of playing here. And if I did, I would remember. Like, because mm-hmm. they stick.
Yeah.
I remember Baltimore was one that I had just was like, this is not great. And then I had a show in Mississippi at a casino. It was like Tunica, Mississippi, I think it was called. And it was absolutely horrible. And so those bad gigs, you ask any comedian, Steve Martin, I bet he can tell you like, oh yeah, I had a really horrible show in, you know, Waterloo mm-hmm. or something, you know. But you just go, those stick with you, yeah.
Do you remember the best show where you're like, I'm the best comedian ever?
Yeah.
Is there one that sticks out?
No, I mean, I had a whole bunch. I remember being in Bloomington, Indiana. I think it was Bloomington. And it was a small room, about 150 people, something like that. And I was just destroying. And then I started talking to the crowd, and I was in a good mood. Mm-hmm. They were like, you know, it was a lot of college students, so they were like happy to be away from school. But I just remember like killing, just absolutely killing. I mean, I've gotten standing ovations, I don't know. But in some theaters, I've gotten standing ovations and stuff. And mm-hmm. those are, that's an amazing feeling, you know.
Is playing Detroit fun? Do you like playing Detroit, or do you feel like you do better outside of your hometown?
I feel like I do better outside of my hometown. And also feel like I do better when I don't know anybody in the audience. Like, I hate for friends to come and see me perform.
Because you feel like you have to be, well, I feel, they view you a certain way?
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. I feel like they know me, mm-hmm. whereas these people that are paying to see me don't know me, so they don't know what to expect.
Yeah, they're probably like, I know Tim, he's not a big deal. I
mean, yeah.
Well, I grew up with this guy.
They're also like, yeah, like anything, you know, I don't want to do material, but like any jokes that I do, the audience is, you know, that came to see me, they're like, they're going along for the ride, whereas I feel like my friends and people that know me, family or whatever, their judgment of what they're seeing is different. So they're not going to be like laughing and having fun as much as they're going to be saying, thinking like, what's true, what's not true, this is not you, this mm-hmm. is you.
I do like the joke, speaking of Detroit, where you say, yeah, I'm from the rough part of Detroit. It's called Detroit.
Yeah.
That's good stuff. But it's nice. But it's getting better, right?
Yeah, it is getting better, yeah.
It's kind of up and coming and kind of a hip place to be now.
Yeah. But they're very sensitive, too, about what you say about them. And that's something that sort of bugs me about cities, and you know, like, mm-hmm. but because, like, I just feel like people get too sensitive about the way other people view them. And, you know, you have to be honest, you know, it's like Detroit is not, you know, it's not Honolulu, mm-hmm. you know, it's not Florida, it's not Minnesota. It is like, it's its own thing. And it had a really rough period. And there are, you know, neighborhoods where there used to be homes where there are now raccoons, you know, there's like wildlife there, mm-hmm. you know, and, but if you act like you can't talk about it, then that's just not right, you know? Mm-hmm. So, I don't know, I think people in Detroit are too sensitive. And like, actually I was on Colbert and I did that joke. And I wasn't even planning on it, and he wasn't expecting me to do it. And people laughed or whatever, and then I'm sorry.
No, it's fine.
And then the fucking headline from Detroit Free Press and Detroit News, Tim Meadows, you know, rips Detroit on Colbert. And I was like, I did one joke about Detroit. And then the rest of the time, I had talked to, like, at the end of the interview, a friend of mine had been in a car accident who was from Detroit, who I'd known forever. And I said to him, like, you know, I just want to say get better. We love you, blah, blah, blah. The fucking article never mentioned that I brought that up. Mm-hmm. The only thing, or that I brought up the fact that I was on a TV show, or the news to them was that he rips Detroit on Colbert. And it was like, it was such a harmless joke, you know? And so out of spite, I bought a condo in Detroit. It's like, I'll show you assholes. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna be here every day, and you have to deal with me.
All right, so Son of Zorn, mm-hmm. great, great show. What was it like acting with a comic book character, or a comic character?
Nothing there.
Yeah. What was there? Was there anything there? How did you know where to look?
There was nothing there. And I loved that show and loved doing it. It was a great cast of people. We had so much fun. And we didn't start understanding exactly what we were doing until like the third or fourth episode. And we only got to do 8, I think. But when we had a stand-in, and the guy who was a stand-in was really funny. And he could improvise, and he was a really nice guy. And so
there was a person there?
Well, we would rehearse it with a person there, and we would block it, so it would be like, Zorn is going to walk from here to there. And so the guy would do that. And we would practice like watching him walk.
And then you had to remember?
We had to remember. And so they would put little marks like, so when he stands here, you're looking here. Mm-hmm. When he's sitting here, you're looking here. And so they'd put a piece of tape on the back wall or whatever. Okay. But then during some of the rehearsals, I can't remember his name, but he's so funny. But during the rehearsals, if we went off book and improvised something, he was just as funny as everybody else and could improvise really well. And so we would have changes because he would say something mm-hmm. and it would get into the show, you know?
That's cool.
And it got better as we did it because we liked him. And so it looked like we were actually acting or talking to somebody who we actually liked. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? So it changed. But it was a fun show to do.
With streaming and so many opportunities to do unique things like you guys did the Rose Parade,
yeah.
Do you think there's a chance that show could get picked up somewhere, Netflix, Prime, something like that?
I doubt it. I think, mm-hmm. I don't know, I just think the consumption for things, like they just, like people are, I don't know, I think people are used to, you know, if something coming out, if it doesn't hit and we don't see it anymore, we're fine. Because mm-hmm. we got Breaking Bad, or we're gonna watch something else, you mm-hmm. know? So I don't think people like really care about those kind of things, as opposed to like when Family Guy went through that thing in the beginning where it was on air, mm-hmm. it went off air, people started circulating DVDs of the show, and mm-hmm. it, and they were like, well, what we had a hit here. And then they brought it back, and then it ran forever. I don't think that like happens much anymore. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know.
All right. Well, I know there's a lot of fans out there, so that's why I thought of that, that could happen.
It is weird. There's a lot of fans for it. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of surprised. Yeah.
All right. So this next question is a fan question, and it's definitely a pop culture reference with things that have been going on recently.
Okay.
I don't know if how much you've been following Twitter and stuff like that the last couple of days, but so Kanye West has been tweeting pro-Trump tweets and a hat with the Make America Great Again hat, and then Chance the Rapper said something to the effect that not all black people have to vote for Democrats. And I guess my question for you, based on this guy's question for you, Nick Hulse is the person asking the question.
Mm-hmm.
As a fellow very successful black entertainer, do you feel like there is, like Kanye said, a lack of freedom of thought in the entertainment industry and or the black culture?
No, I don't. I think even that idea that like all black people vote Democrat or, you know, whatever, or are Republican, or are Democrats, I think even that statement is sort of not real, because I think it's, I think it's like an individual thing. I don't know. I don't think, like, I think it's weird, but I think African Americans, they vote their conscience more than most people. I mean, we got President Trump. That was not a vote of people out of the goodness of their hearts thinking like, this is the guy that's gonna be a great, you know, like leader. It was like a vote of we want change, and we, you know, and we're angry because we feel like we've been left behind, or, you know, whatever. But I don't know, like my family or friends, African American friends, like we don't talk about like we're all Democrats. It's just like mm-hmm. individually, like you make a choice just like everybody else. And mm-hmm. it's an obvious choice that African Americans have made a effort to support Democrats, because it feels like the Democratic Party reaches out to African-American communities. If Republicans did it more and it was like an obvious, tangible movement that you could feel from the Republicans, African-Americans would support Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know. I just think like grouping, Kanye West doesn't know how I vote. Chance the Rapper doesn't know how I vote. You know, so yeah, I don't know what else.
All right, so I guess I've kind of touched on this question already a little bit, but you've had a long period of success. It seems like it would be easy to just kind of take it easy.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you keep working so hard? What is it inside of you that continues to give you that energy to keep doing what you're doing?
I don't know, probably the same sort of thing that got me started, which was, I just got to do that. You know, mm-hmm. it's like, I don't feel like I'm like satisfied or like creatively finished or anything. And also I have kids, and I think, you know, I need to get ready to pay for colleges.
mm-hmm.
I'd also like to retire comfortably one day. Even though my therapist said that I'll never retire, he goes, you'll go insane if you retire.
Like you can always tell that have you something. You have the drive to just keep going.
Some people, you just have the drive to be creative in some way or the other. And it's not financially, but it's like you got to have an outlet. Mm-hmm. Like even with stand-up, it was like I had to do it because I was going nuts, not being able to, talk and be funny or get ideas out there and see if they were funny.
All right. Well, speaking of being busy, you're doing stand-up here this weekend. Mm-hmm. Also, you have some upcoming projects here just from IMDb. I found these. There might be more. Yeah. The Goldbergs, which you're a regular on there, Schooled, Man with a Plan, and then an untitled CBS project. Mm-hmm. Tell us what you have coming on the horizon.
Well, the Schooled spinoff from the Goldbergs got picked up by ABC for 13 episodes. So we're going to do that later this summer.
So will your role expand in that, or...?
Yeah, I mean, it's basic. I don't know what the show will be. Mm-hmm. I think it'll be a workplace comedy with the teachers more involved.
Kids,
but it's my discipline character, and Brian Callen is the coach character. It's a spinoff of those characters. For those characters, so it's kind of a we'll see what happens with it. And then I did a pilot for CBS that is with Damon Wayans Jr. But that was, sort of like, I don't know, I just work. So I just keep throwing whatever sticks, mm-hmm. I just keep putting stuff out there. But the main things I'm doing is that the Goldberg spinoff, and then I have a show for CBS, streaming that is called No Activity. And, we just got picked up for a second season. And that's a really fun show to do. I don't know if you've seen it or...
No, not yet.
It's great. It's based on an Australian show. And it's about two cops sitting in a... their state on stakeout. And all the scenes that I'm in is just me and another guy sitting in a car. And the scenes will last for like 10 minutes. We're just telling stories. We have dialogue. And
sounds like Seinfeld.
Just yeah,
it's like the conversations that they would have in the restaurant,
Yeah.
It's just, there's not a lot happening. It's just the writing.
Yes.
Makes it happen.
Exactly what it is. So it's my character and his partner, and then the other characters are two operators in the call center. And so we're checking in with them while we're on stakeout. And then they have scenes together where they're talking, getting to know each other. And then the other scenes are with two crooks that we're actually staking out watching. But they're inside of a warehouse, and they don't know we're watching them. And their scenes are about the relationships between them. And so it's a show where you'd have three or four scenes with only two people talking. But there is a plot that goes on that connects everybody eventually. Mm-hmm. But it was another thing Will Ferrell's company produced, and they hired me for. And it's great.
So it's Funny or Die?
Funny or Die, okay. Yeah.
Do you have anything on your bucket list that you want to create or definitely do at some point?
No, not really.
Okay.
I mean, I was talking earlier about how much I love the Tiny House show.
Mm-hmm.
Tiny houses.
On HGTV?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
And I was thinking, I'd love to get a tiny house and move somewhere like Maui or... So that's the only other...
You just bought a condo, though.
I know. I got to keep... That's why I got to keep working. I got too many monthly bills.
Do you have a favorite role that you've done?
No, I mean, Ladies Man was probably the most fun in general, and Mean Girls, I think, was also a lot of fun, and I feel like those two things I really connected with as an actor, and the writing and everything was good.
Will Ladies Man ever come back?
No.
Really?
No.
Okay. He's retired?
No, if the opportunity was there, I'm not going to create the opportunity. If they came to me and said, Netflix, if they were like, we want to do a Kwanzaa special starring a ladies' man, then I'd go, yeah,
mm-hmm.
Which is actually a good idea.
Let's write that down.
Yeah.
Will you be hosting SNL anytime soon?
No.
Okay.
No. I'm not a big enough star to host SNL.
I don't know
SNL.
About that.
I'm not.
One thing I thought was really interesting, every time I hear, because I heard your impression of Lorne Michaels,
mm-hmm.
and all of the other impressions that I've heard by castmates, it sounded like his voice sounded exactly like Dr. Evil.
Yeah, right.
Is that voice, do you know if that's where the voice came from for the character?
I think it is, yes. Okay. I don't want to, you know, but I think...
Was he a Dr. Evil type person or?
No, but okay. he had a lot of power, and the way that he talked to you though made it seem like he didn't have a lot of power. So, but he had a lot of opinions, and you knew most of the time that he was right, you know. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Mike, I can't say yes he did or no he didn't, but yeah, it does remind me of Lauren. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, Tim Meadows, thanks for being here.
Yeah,
appreciate it.
Bet.
And Twin Cities, make sure you check this guy out. He's going to be at the Joke Joint this Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. JokeJointComedyClub.com. Thanks for being here.
How long did this last? Because it was way longer than I was expecting.
Well, I think you got here at 10, and it's 11:01. So I took advantage of it. Sorry.
You did.
Once we got you in the chair, it was like, you know, before you get here, it's like it's going to take 5 minutes. And then when we get here, we lock the door.
You know what?
Security's out there.
I changed my mind. You are ready for New York or LA.
Nice.